Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
Welcome to Barbecue Nation with JT's After Hours. Conversation that took place after the broadcast ended.
Hey everybody, it's JT, and this is a special version of Barbecue Nation. It is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Everybody, welcome to Barbecue Nation, and this is the After Hour segment. I'm JT, along with Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet, more importantly, a friend and a pioneer in the culinary world. Is there anything out there, Graham, that you see, and I don't care what part of the food world it's in, I don't care if it's barbecue or in the kitchens or in the TV chefs or whatever, is there anything out there that you think that maybe we're not going the right direction, that they're showing people stuff that's not very practical to do?
Oh dear. I'd love to be able to give you a good answer to that, but I was asked the other day, why is it there's a restaurant which is in the community where I am? Why don't you come over to our restaurant? And I said, well, quite frankly, I am enjoying this process of creating things for myself, and I'm simply solo cooking now most of the time. I have some friends in from time to time, but mostly I'm cooking just for myself. And I'm so aware of what my food preference and taste preferences are. And I know that in the restaurant they do a very nice job, but it's not what I eat. So I've got to confess to you that here's this 86-year-old now, who still drives my car and still goes for a speed walk in the morning, and as I've seen, you know, my weight and my blood cholesterol and all the rest of the stuff is fine. I think it's that way because I know what I'm doing, and therefore I do not go out. I went out to a Polish restaurant the other day, and they served marvelously small portions. They're European people from Poland. And they're serving it in a European fashion. And European fashion, for those people who've been recently to Europe will say, they're about half the portion size that we are used to in the United States. So, and I cannot sit down now to large plates of food. And I'm put off by it, and I simply ask usually, is it possible that you can serve me with a smaller portion? If you've got an 8-ounce steak, I'd like a 4. So I do ask for that, and I feel like I'm, one of those nasty old people who keep on asking people to change what they do. But, oh, dear, it worries me. It does, you know.
Well, I think that, for professional cooks and for TV cooks, and even if you're competing, whether it's barbecue or baking or whatever you're doing, I don't blame those folks, myself included in that group, more than I claim would blame, if you will, the fast food restaurants, though they supersize it. Would you like an extra large fries with that? We're indoctrinating people to eat that way when they're little. And if you grow up, if you do it that way for 10, 15, 20 years, you're not going to know any better. And You know, I see kids.
Exactly right.
I see kids in the community where I live. And, I'll tell you, you know, I'm 63. I'm overweight. I've got some old war wounds, so to speak, that I'm dealing with and gradually transitioning my weight back to where it was. But I'm working on it. But I see kids that are 12, 14, 16 in the community where I live, and they walk down the street. And there's a part of that group that's very healthy. They're running, they're playing sports, they're doing whatever. But there's an awful lot of them that have the 32-ounce Slurpee or Pepsi or whatever it is there and shoving candy bars in their mouth as they're walking down the street. And I'm thinking, man, you're going to have a tough go of it by the time you're 30 if you're eating and doing that stuff. So...
And I think that is the only thing that I would say is what I've observed is I don't like the portion sizes. And I really don't know what to do about it. I've come to the conclusion, Graham, you're 86 years of age. You're on your way out, buddy. there's nothing you can do about this one. But I read that in the United States of America at the moment, that 82% of our chronic diseases are caused by our own behavior.
Right.
What we choose to do to ourselves. Sorry for that pinging in the background, but
that
was my wife's anniversary present to me when we were 35 years married, and it's a naval clock, and it keeps on pinging.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, one of the songs I meant to tell you this. One of the songs I closed out the show with in the regular hour was Rod Stewart's "Sailing." The name of the song is "Sailing." It's a beautiful song. I'm sure you've heard it, and I know how much you love to be on the water. And so I thought that was apropos for that. So
thank you.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. Appreciate that.
Do you think?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Do you think that young cooks, young chefs, young pit masters, whatever, can get the type of education that you got and I got part of? You know, you see a lot of people like come to our culinary school, and you know, there's a couple of there were a couple of them here in Portland, and they charge those kids an arm and a leg to go there. They charge them, you know, $3,000 for a set of knives that you could buy for $250 and that type of thing.
Oh, dear.
And, and it's a lot like a lot of things. They get out of there and they've got their certificate, but it's tough to find a job because they really don't have the experience. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I do know, because I'm on the advisory board of, and so therefore I know it intimately, of a cooking school which is within striking distance from where you are at the moment in Portland. It's down at Cannon Beach, and it is a culinary academy, and it is run by one of my old students when I was a visiting professor at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park in New York. And he was one of my students. I signed a book for him in those days. He showed it to me. And I can't remember him at the time, but I know him very well now. He's a man by the name of Ira Criso. And by the way, you should make a note of that and have him on your program. I think you would enjoy him enormously.
I will.
He is teaching young students brilliantly in 1 year. And the cost is about one-fifth of the Culinary Institute of America. And the content about what he's teaching is very, very similar and more up-to-date, actually, on what is needed today. Now, the one caveat to this, he is a Christian, and it is called the Christian Culinary Academy. And there is a very strong part of that which is a faith part. They pray together in the morning, and they look after each other and care about each other. It's a coeducational class of about 12 students. And I have to tell you that I've been involved with this thing for about 8 years now. And I've seen what those students go to after they've finished, and seen how much less they have to pay to get such a good education. If the Christian side would offend somebody, then you shouldn't go. But if it would be something that your child is interested in as well, then it would be the best place to go in the world today, literally.
I have a friend of mine. I won't say we're close friends. He's been on the show a couple times, and he owns three restaurants here in Portland. His name is BJ Smith. And I asked him, because he went through the, I don't know if it was CIA or what culinary training he went through. Excuse me. And I asked him last year, I said, what would you recommend? He goes, here's what I would do. He said, I would save the money that you're going to spend on doing that, and I would go find a chef that you really looked up to, maybe New York, Los Angeles, Portland, Seattle, wherever, and go, you know, volunteer to work for them for free if you need to, and just study under them for a couple of years. And he goes, it'll be a lot cheaper than... and you can actually use the money to live on. So that was his advice, and I thought that was very interesting that he said that.
You know, that's what happened to me, because I was put in my father's hotel kitchen with a French chef, and so I spent 2 years literally, you know, watching and learning and doing. Then I went to food school, and then I was taught from a food school point of view, and it was very technical and very French and everything else. But I had been learning local French stuff from a local Frenchman. And so I came back and then went back in the kitchen and started telling the chef what he should be doing from a technical point of view and academic point of view. He was not impressed. So my feeling about this one is, I think, in fact, it's a good thing to have an education.
Sure.
From an academic point of view, because even with the best chef in the world, inventive though he is, it's going to very much influence the rest of your career, and you may want to have a broader aspect of food than just that one person.
Why? I'm going to ask you a question, Graham. Why did you never use the title chef? I mean, you came up originally with the Galloping Gourmet, but why did you never go Chef Graham Kerr?
Oh, I can answer that completely. I am in awe of chefs who are good at their job. They're creative, wonderful people. They order food with intelligence. They can manage a budget like an accountant. They are into human relations with the rest of the staff that they have, and they need to be able to do that. They can manage stress and tension every single day. They receive food and process it, manufacture it, sell it, and receive money for it, all in the cycle of one day. And if you don't do that well, you can go bust quicker than any other business that there is. In other words, I really respect those people and wouldn't dare to call myself a chef. Wouldn't dare to call it. Now, am I a food enthusiast? Yes. What do you call that? A gourmet. And nowadays, if you put a wooden handle on a fry pan, you'd call it a gourmet fry pan. So it's been a word which has been much misused. And in fact, even in the first place, the word gourmet le piqueur was the first time it was used in Louis XIV's court. And this lesser official of the French court would consult with the chef and say to the chef, the new Burgundy that we have delivered is somewhat adolescent and a little sharp. And I think a pheasant would be good with that. Forgive me, sorry.
Oh, you're fine.
And the chef would say, very well. So the wine would come first, and the chef would match the food to the wine.
Mm-hmm.
And the gourmet was the one who gave that advice to the chef.
So what do you match with a Big Mac as far as wine? I never figured that one out.
Well, I would use Calibre, which is Calibre, K-A-L-I-B-A-R. It's a beer without alcohol, which is what I consume, and it's smoky and dark, and has a very good flavor. And it goes, I would think, quite well with a Big Mac, but since I've only eaten two Big Macs in my life, actually, I've never eaten a Big Mac. Yeah.
Would you have a quarter pounder or something?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Forgive me, but that's not a... there we are.
You all right?
Sorry.
All right. Well,
yes, I'm all right. Yeah.
If I was going to wrap this up here in a second, Graham, but I wanted to say if there was one piece of advice in the new year that you could give people, mm-hmm. and this is your audience to do it to, what would the Graham Cares advice be?
I'd go to Costco and get the 5-pound bag of stir-fried vegetables.
That's it.
And use those. They're amazing. Drop them deep frozen straight into a pan. Toss them a bit of olive oil, and you've got a plate full of vegetables, which are very good. And nothing is going to go off. It'll be deep frozen in your fridge. And then it'll stick in your throat.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And really do that. And then throw a little meat in with that at the same time that you stir fry it. And you've got a meal in a moment, and it's full of vegetables and full of color. And it's been frozen at its peak and prepared at its peak. It's really an extremely good buy at about 90 cents a serving.
Sounds good to me. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's well worth it, please. And now you can throw oregano into that if you like. And,
oh, sure.
A little grated cheese, perhaps, you know. And you can take a sweet potato and put it into a blender with some evaporated skim milk and make a sauce and pour that over the top of the vegetables. There we go.
There you go. Graham Care, the Galloping Gourmet, and my dear friend, thank you for being with us here. And I hope that you have a delightful New Year's.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I hope you have a delightful New Year's, my friend.
Thank you. And you too, my dear friend. I look forward to a new year of chatting with you.
There you go. We will do that. We'll be back next week with another edition of After Hours here on Barbecue Nation. Until then, please take care.